Hi, this is your host, Michael Britt. Thanks to you, the Psych Files has become incredibly popular. Thousands of episodes are downloaded every day by students looking for help on their tests, professionals preparing for exams, and lifelong learners who just enjoy hearing about psychology. Now, this success is great, but it's expensive, and I really need your help to keep the podcast going. Check out the website at thepsychfiles.com and become a patron. For the price of a cup of coffee or a slice of pizza, you can keep the show going. And if you enjoy the show, it has helped you with your tests, then please lend a hand. Click on the Patreon logo on the Psych Files website. Become a patron and keep your show going and growing. Thanks so much. Hello and welcome to the Psych Files. I'm the host of the Psych Files, Michael Britt, and the title of this episode is Predictions. Predictions. This time I'd like to open the episode with my own prediction. Now, we've been hearing a lot of predictions over the past month or so about what will happen this year in people's lives and in politics, etc. Well, I've got my own prediction. Are you ready? Here I go. I predict that something will happen to someone at some time this year. There you go. That's my prediction. Now, you probably have decided that that's not a very good prediction after all. Well, you know what? I would agree with you if I was not me and listening to me, which would be a strange thing, because that's a terrible prediction. And why is it terrible? Well, you know that it's a terrible prediction because it's so incredibly vague. And it is therefore the opposite of what you want in a good prediction. And it would be great if people could predict the future, and maybe some people can. So I have my mind open to that possibility. But I do want you to think twice when you hear a prediction. So let's just take a look at some, maybe perhaps not that prediction. I do have a more interesting prediction later on. I might as well make it right now. Many years ago, there was a prediction that people with larger brains were smarter. Now, I don't know if you have looked into that at all, but let's take a look at that one, too. But first, let's find out, what is it about that first prediction? Something will happen to someone at some time this year. What's wrong with it? Well, it is not specific. And what we demand of scientific predictions is that they be specific. So if I had said to you that a 3-ton meteor will fall in the Grand Canyon on March 9th at 6:15 p.m. Now, that's a pretty interesting prediction. That's the kind of prediction that raises eyebrows, and you would think, hey, that's interesting. Where did he get that from? I wonder what will happen. And I have heard a lot about meteors and that sort of thing. So, why is that a better prediction? Because I have stuck my neck out, and my credibility is on the line, and that's what's necessary. When you hear someone make a prediction about something will happen to some well-known person, there'll be a divorce, you have to sort of ask yourself how likely those things are to happen anyway, and just how specific is that prediction, and could someone redefine their prediction at a later date, at the end of the year? Could they go back and say, well, you know, this is how I really meant it to be? Because people who make predictions can be slippery, and so can scientists. Let me give you an example of that. Maybe this has happened to you. It certainly has happened to me. You're thinking about someone, and they call you that day. And then you go, hey, that's weird. You know, something's going on there, something vague like a synchronicity or something like that. Now, the problem with this, aside from the fact that we don't really know why it happens, but, you know, there's some vague sense that our minds are, on the same wavelength or something like that. The problem with thinking that there's something to that is that we're looking at an occurrence of two events. But we don't look at when those events don't happen. So, for example, have you ever thought about this? Now, you thought about someone and they called you. Okay, that's interesting. Now, have you marked down when you thought about that person and that person did not call you? How many times does that happen? I'll bet you that happens a lot. But you don't remark on that. You don't notice that. You don't put that down in your diary that day. Hey, I thought about Billy and he didn't call me. We don't do that. So we don't look at things that don't tend to confirm the way we believe, which is what psychologists call the confirmation bias, which we'll return to in just a little bit. So not only do we not look at when it doesn't occur, but we also tend to be a bit flexible. For example, if you think about someone and you see that person, oh, I don't know, 3 days later, you might still say that there's something, hey, I was just thinking about you, I don't know, the other day. So now you have defined whatever this strange thing is as it's still happening even if it's 3 days or 2 days, obviously, and then 1 day, or it could be a couple hours. You know, it might even be last week. So you're being very slippery with your definition of when something can be considered an unusual event caused by this unusual and strange phenomenon, whatever you may refer to it as, synchronicity or something like that. So that's the kind of slippery thinking we really can't have if we're going to do science. So a term that I really like, it is a term that can be somewhat confusing, and the term is falsifiability. And it's an essential term coined by Karl Popper, I believe, in the 50s, I think. Falsifiable is something that's actually quite good, even though it sounds bad. You being a scientist, or a social scientist, or any kind of scientist, you want to make a prediction that could come out false. That gives you credibility. A specific prediction could come out false, and that's what you want. You don't want a prediction like the one I gave in the beginning about something will happen to somebody at some time. You don't want a prediction like that, because it's not falsifiable. It could always come out true, depending upon how I define things. So my prediction about a meteor falling at a certain time in a certain place is falsifiable, and that's a good thing. So, being specific. Now, in field of science in general, and principles followed by psychologists, being specific means to create operational definitions about our terms. So if we're going to say that a certain treatment affects people, we don't really say it that way. If we have a treatment which we think will decrease depression, let's say, we'll take that. We have to be specific that we have to define that treatment, of course, but we have to say that the treatment will do what? Okay, it will decrease scores on the, let's say, the Beck Depression Inventory by a significant amount and probably within a certain time. So we have made that prediction quite specific by saying things like decrease, saying things like significantly, which is what brings in statistics, which is what psychology students are surprised to learn they have to learn, but they do. And I've defined that it is scores, right? That it is not my impression. It's not like I'm treating you and then saying, well, I have my impression is that you are less depressed. It is a score on an established test. Okay, those are the operational definitions I need to make. And also the other thing is I can't make that many predictions. And that's one of the problems with people who make predictions is that in January, they make a lot of predictions. And we don't allow that in science because you could make 20 predictions in your study. Well, it'll do this, and the treatment will do that, and it'll also do this, and it could do that, and it has the effect on this. Because what happens is we tend to go back and focus on the ones that came out the way that we want. And we could focus on the ones that we want, and let's say not so much mention the others or mention them in somewhat dismissive way. And that of course, is not good science. Okay, so one of the most fascinating examples was made by a man named Paul Broca. And what I'm going to talk about now is briefly sort of a summary of a section of a very fascinating book called The Mismeasure of Man. Great book by Stephen Jay Gould. Now, what Gould does, he sort of takes us back to the mid-1800s. We're at a time when people are fascinated with numbers, and particularly the potential to apply numbers and measurement to human beings. So it's at this time that Paul Broca has an interesting prediction that people with larger brains are smarter and they are more successful in the world. Okay, well, you could go ahead and make that prediction if you like, but you have to be a bit more specific, especially if you're going to really study it in a scientific way. So how do you talk about people having bigger brains. Okay, so how do we measure the size of your brain? Most of the studies did it posthumously. They would take the person's skull and fill it with, believe it or not, lead shot, essentially BBs. And they had very specific ways to make sure pack it down correctly, and they'd pour it out and measure it. Okay, so then your next part is a little trickier, because if you're saying that people with large brains are more successful, okay, well, we don't really have any tests for successful. We don't have any intelligence tests at that point. They won't come until another 50 years or so. So this part of the prediction is a little on the slippery slope side. We define successful and intelligent by people who are successful and intelligent, which would be scientists. Now, these are smart people. But they also include other groups, people who are rich, people who are high in social class. So the belief there was that these people must be that they are successful in life because of their larger brains. So they did a measurement of brain size and what they called men of eminence. It's not no small mistake that most of the people measured were men. And the assumption even being that women and people of poverty had smaller brains. Well, they produced some evidence which appeared to support their theory, but what happened instead was they were affected by what we call, again, confirmation bias. We mentioned that earlier as what you do or may do. You draw a connection between you thinking about someone you know and that person calling you. In this case, they went into the study knowing what they wanted to find. Gould tries to make a case that there was a certain amount of earnestness about what they were doing. But they were guided by the belief that people who were successful had a larger brain. And what that does, though, is affect the way you collect data. And what Broca did was when he came upon a skull of a person of eminence, someone successful in society, and it was a small skull, so he did a little digging into those kinds of skulls and found out that the person was perhaps a little older, maybe that person was sickly, maybe there were other reasons for the skull to be small, and so that person was discarded. And he also, when he found a person of lower in social status at the time who had a larger brain or a larger skull volume, he again would do a little digging and come up with reasons to exclude that person from the study. So when you do those sorts of things, you're being guided by your previous conclusion, really, and you, lo and behold, find evidence to support your hypothesis. But the evidence is tainted by the fact that you came into that knowing what you wanted to find. And that is why we have double-blind studies. The person administering the treatment or the person collecting the data does not know what the hypothesis of the study is about. All right, well, that is all I have today for predictions. And once again, a reminder about the Patreon campaign. If you enjoy the show or it has helped you on your exams, please help me to keep it going. A small donation per month will keep the Psych Files going, and we can do more. So give just a little bit and become a part of the show. Thanks.